Because I can control the weather, they call me Storm.
Welcome to This Week in Nerd News, your one-stop shop for all the pop culture you may have missed this week. Brought to you by the Black Nerd Problems Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Keith Reed Cleveland.
And I'm your host, Victoria Vertine. So there are some pretty obvious things, like X-Men 97, which just dropped. We have the first two episodes right now as of recording. And there are plenty of other things that you could argue are kind of in that same 80s, 90s era, right? We got new He-Man, we got new She-Ra, we have new Sonic, tons of things like that. But it's ramping up. So with the success of X-Men 97, which we'll get into because it was brilliant. It is one of the things that I'm glad is back, although I did not think that I needed it. I don't think that we need 90s pop-up bars. I don't think that we need Street Sharks, which is doing a 30th anniversary line of toys, because it's been 30 years, because the 90s were 30 years ago. Oh, I feel so old. It's fine. I don't think that we need Street Sharks necessarily. Margot Robbie, I never remember, has signed up to kind of spearhead a live-action Sims movie. That doesn't feel to me like something that is necessary. There are a few that, like, maybe I'm cool with. If we actually get a live-action Static Shock movie, that'd be pretty dope. And then there's talk of maybe Marvel revisiting Spider-Man 98. If they keep it animated, if they give it the X-Men 97 treatment, I could see that being pretty awesome. If they try and do live action, I don't think it's necessary, but we'll see. Add it onto the list. I know we talked about this not too long ago, but if we actually get more animated gargoyles, I'd be down with that. And I know that you've got some stuff on your list as well, Keith. So I'm gonna send it over to you. What do you think about the idea in general of this, like, ramp up that we're seeing of, let's just reboot 90s stuff because everybody loved the 90s. What things are happening that you don't think are necessary? Are there things that aren't happening that you think would be good? How are you feeling?
So earlier on, you brought up a point that triggered a thought for me about nostalgia and how it works. And I think you're absolutely correct in the fact that nostalgia is not rooted in things that anyone asks for. It's rooted for things that once we see, we all of a sudden feel like we wanted. Because these are not things that we're actively thinking about, no matter how much we appreciate and love them, right? Like, I love Static Shock, and I get excited every time there's more news about a potential adaptation of some sort. But I hadn't thought about it in months until you just said Static Shock about a few minutes ago, right? And I think that's a big part of it. And I think back about how, like, 10 years ago, when I was mostly just freelancing and writing for websites like Uproxx and the Daily Dot, they were deep in their nostalgia phase, but they had their content centered, at least from my perspective, heavily on content that was from like the mid to late 80s, which I was like, I wasn't alive yet. And I just feel like it's our turn right now. And because of that, we're more cognizant of it because the nostalgia machine has been a thing that's been running for a long time. And definitely, it may be like at a fever pitch right now, but like, I think it's just kind of like, it's our turn because like, I feel like nostalgia tends to run from like a 20 to 40 year range essentially. Now, X-Men 97 is indeed amazing, and I do feel like I owe the audience a clarification for earlier episodes where I kind of roasted the trailer a little bit. And I still stand by the fact that it's ridiculous that Gambit just hopped on Wolverine's back like a cowboy and like did like a combo move and then hopped off. Like, I'm sorry, there's a better way to get around to that. But the show is amazing.
I gotta interrupt you real quick because you just said the sentence, Gambit hopped on Wolverine's back, and that sounds like the most Gambit, like, action ever.
You know, when you put it that way, it's very on brand, but it just looks weird to me.
It does look weird.
You are two both very large individuals, and yes, strength-wise, I know it works because you're both superpowered and all that kind of stuff, but like, the way they shot it is like, Wolverine's running straight towards the camera, Gambit just pops up off-screen from basically where you're standing, lands on Wolverine's back, charges up his claws, and then like, pops off again like it ain't nothing. I'm like, y'all practice this too often, that was too smooth. But I gotta give it its props when I can. Now, as far as the adaptations that we're getting and how questionable they are, when I saw the news about there being a potential Street Sharks adaptation, my first thought was, that doesn't work in nowadays. Because, like, back then, we didn't have to explain the fact, like, how are there sharks diving into concrete and asphalt and just moving around? Like, I know they have big muscles, but this makes no sense. Are they in the sewers just keeping their, like, dorsal fins above ground? Like, what's happening here? And also, how much destruction are they doing to everywhere they go? Just to, not even, like, for combo moves every now and then. Like, just to move from point A to point B, they're diving into the asphalt and, like, destroying the street as they move. It's ridiculous.
I love that city destruction is your is like your number two objection to street sharks. They destroy too much property.
You know, like, I'm getting old. I do own my home, and so I think this is kind of the spectrum I'm coming from. You know how upset I would be if I walked outside and saw cracks in the street because a giant swole shark decided to take a stroll? No.
All right, keep going. I love it.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, gotta get it back. I feel like, to when you talk about the Spider-Man thing, like, when Spider-Man as a property is at its best, it's when it's simultaneously successful on different platforms. So, like, when, of course, you have a lot of live-action stuff and everything, you also had, like, a dope cartoon on. So I think we're at that time now where, given where, like, because basically the animated show for Spider-Man is there to hold you over until the next movie comes out. And as we wait for, like, the future of Spider-Man and the MCU and Sony Universe, Tom Holland negotiations and all that stuff, we're primed for, like, another dope animated Spider-Man show. So that just needs to happen. Automatic win, no brainer at all. Speaking of, I've just reminded me how a few weeks ago a new headline broke that once again there was an opportunity to make a Batman Beyond movie a la Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse, and people said no, because specifically we had an idea for a pitch that came from one of the creators of My Dad the Bounty Hunter, which is amazing on Netflix, go check it out, Patrick Harpin, and Yuki Demers, who was a visual artist on the Spider-Verse films. So basically, they were pitching the idea of, like, making a Batman Beyond film that looks like Spider-Verse does, and that sounds like a money-making machine. So it's ridiculous we have to fight for that. That needs to happen. So basically, I feel like we are at a point where nostalgia just pulls on our urge once we see something we wanted, and that's how our money comes from, because we're now the ones who are old enough to theoretically spend our own money and stuff, right? So basically, we have another, like, 10, 15 years of that. So, like, it's going to come with some hits, going to come with some misses, but it's probably just safe to just wait it out and just see what comes up.
Speaking of waiting things out, let's take a break, wait a little bit, and then come back with our big ticket, which is Baldur's Gate.
And we're back with our big ticket item for this episode. As Victoria alluded to at the end of our last segment, we're talking about none other than Baldur's Gate 3, which is one of my favorite video games of all time, and I'm sure the case is also the same for many of our listeners out there, if not one of their favorites at the very least. But I'm afraid that the news that I have to share with you may come with some mixed responses, ranging from understanding to disappointing to, in some cases, like, proud, because I felt all as much as myself. So to go ahead and stop bearing the lead and cut to the chase, at a recent speaking event engagement, the game director of Baldur's Gate 3, whose name is Fen Vink, said that they will not be releasing any DLC, which stands for downloadable content, or even a sequel to Baldur's Gate, a la Baldur's Gate 4, anytime soon. There are no plans for that. As a matter of fact, they were working on making DLC for Baldur's Gate 3, given how this game came out and was already expected to be a success, but not to the point that it was, where it became the most popular game in the industry for a whole year and won multiple Game of the Year awards, both of the Game Awards and now the DICE Awards. Larian Studios, which is the studio responsible for Baldur's Gate 3 as a series, they're leaving the IP of Dungeons & Dragons with Wizards of the Coast, aka Hasbro, because Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast, which is the gaming company that's responsible for D&D and Magic the Gathering. What their plan is to eventually just, like, wipe their hands of the entire relationship with Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast entirely and just move on to a new idea, intellectual property down the road, figure out what the next step is going to be. And that's an interesting approach, because I loved Baldur's Gate 3. I think I've gotten everything out of the game as it is, as I will. And that's a sad reality because I enjoyed it oh so much. But also, I was sitting over, I was one of the people over here just assuming, given how massively successful the game was, that we were going to get DLC and a sequel some point down the road. And now I find out we're getting neither. But when you take a second to think about the reasoning as to why this may be happening, because for the sake of good business relationships, Larian is never going to say exactly what this is. Basically, it kind of seems like they're just done putting up with Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro's BS to make this game. Basically, Larian Studios had to pay Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast a percentage of the game, or just like a flat fee, to use the Dungeons & Dragons license to make this game, which includes the mechanics and characters and all that kind of stuff that is associated with D&D specifically. Are you surprised to hear the news that we're not getting any DLC or sequel content for Baldur's Gate 3, and what are your feelings on that?
I don't know if surprised is quite the right word. I mean, I was in the sense that, like, I didn't expect as definitive of an announcement this soon, but am I surprised that Larian is walking away from Wizards of the Coast? No, that doesn't surprise me. And I think I fall more into that category of a little bit proud. I think that given the overall artistry that is Baldur's Gate 3 and the different interviews with all manner of folks who worked on the team, right? From coders to artists to voice actors, how this was developed from the ground up. Their virtues, their morals are very clear. The world that they want to create, not just in-game, but in the real world, the world that they created for their own team as they were working on this, is very clear. And they never made excuses for that. They never apologized for it. It was all very matter of fact. And all of those things, it's not that they aren't necessarily in line with Wizards of the Coast. It's just that Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro both, and I would say that while this was always there for Wizards of the Coast, it has gotten worse since Hasbro took over. The guiding line for Wizards of the Coast is capitalism. So any other virtue, any other moral, any other thing can only go as far as it does not interrupt capitalism. And that is fundamentally opposed to everything that Larian seems to extol. Because people come first, not profit. And they seem to see a world in which you can put people first and still get a lot of profit. And I would argue, made a great case for that with Baldur's Gate 3. But that is not how Wizards of the Coast has been operating for a very, very long time, and especially in the last year or so, have again voiced quite often, like, well, we need to cut people because of our bottom line. We're not going to go in this direction, even though it's popular, because of our bottom line. We're going to add more ways to get money because of our bottom line. So I am not surprised by the overall separation, but maybe the timing a little bit.
Yeah, totally get that. Like, I think the surprise comes in the delivery and, like you said, the matter of factness of the decision, because you figure that what they would do at most is, hey, we decided we're not going to do any DLC content. We're going to just keep on patching the game as it is. And then, like, leak it out, like, a year or two down the road. Like, yeah, we're not doing Baldur's Gate 4. Instead, we're doing this, right? But it sounded like they just wanted to go ahead and get in front of it because, and just get ahead of all the speculation and all the stuff around it and the assumptions that people like me had that, yeah, of course we're going to get DLC in Baldur's Gate 4. This is such a great time. But you raised a good point earlier where I feel like out of all of the many things that made Baldur's Gate 3 an amazing game as it was, Dungeons and Dragons intrinsically was not top of that list. Like, things that made that game work so well were, like you said, The voice acting performances, it was the world building aspect, it was the love and craft that the people who made the game put into it. And yes, it was a wonderful selling point to be able to go ahead and just say like, hey, Baldur's Gate 3 is basically Dungeons & Dragons in a video game. It's a very simple, short boilerplate elevator pitch for a video game that works. But it's not losing that much to just go to a different mechanical system that works in a similar way, and you could tell a similar story with characters like that down the road, which is probably what they're thinking at this point. And like you were saying earlier, I fully agree that this seems to be a partnership ending as it should, because both sides have misaligned values. Like, as we said, like, Wizards of the Coast is owned by Hasbro, which, as reports say, the only part of Hasbro that has been profitable has been its gaming division. That's primarily on the back of properties like Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering, which you can tell by how they kind of keep on releasing more and more content, or at least have in the past for that regard and stuff, right? And the ironic thing about that is one of the two biggest mistakes that, or not even necessarily mistakes, depending on how you view it, let's say controversial moments that Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast had recently, one of which does involve, they announced early this year over 1,000 layoffs, which included people who helped make Baldur's Gate 3 a thing from the Wizards of the Coast side. So it's like, and this happened after Baldur's Gate 3 came out and was making all the money and backing up Brinks trucks and everything, which makes people wonder, like, is this actually about performance, or is this about something other else, some other metrics that we don't understand? That often happens when you get, like, people who are focused on finance and economics and performance instead of, like, product and end results and stuff, right? And the other big issue that they had, we talked about on this show, was a few months ago, I think last December, when the leaks came out that Wizards of the Coast were considering updating the open game license for the game, which completely could have just changed the relationship of the D&D community with the property in of itself when it came to their, what they can contribute to the community and what they have to give back to Wizards of the Coast, whether it be essentially royalties or like how they can or can't use the game stuff, right? That was a huge moment that everyone had to like reel it back in for and everything. But that's basically a kind of a summation of what Wizards of the Coast relationship and reputation essentially is like right now, which is totally polar opposites to what Larian Studios kind of represents right now, at least on the surface for what we can see on the outside and everything. So like, no, I wasn't surprised by this at all either. This basically just seems like Larian's washing their hands of the entire thing and they're going to go ahead and move on. Like a lot of other people who are big in the D&D specific space have been, like Critical Role has been coming out with their own like different mechanical systems through their own press and all that stuff recently more and more. Like even like Dimension 20 I've been watching, like they've been playing with mechanics in a way where you can tell like they're trying to become less reliant on Dungeons and Dragons specifically. Like I think a lot of people see the writing on the wall that hey, this game that we love has fallen into the hands of like capitalism, essentially, for lack of a more specific phrase and all that, which is what it is in this case, and who knows where that can go, right? So they're preparing themselves for that reality. So I think Larian Studios is just joining that trend and just getting ready for what may be coming. But I do think this is not going to hurt them at all. Like, the audience is going to find them. It's been built in at this point. Like, they're going to be fine.
I agree. That's exactly what I was just going to say. No matter what Larian does, I think everyone will be waiting for that. In a way that, honestly, they're not waiting for Wizards of the Coast content at this point in time. So
The biggest sacrifice here, though, is that we won't get to see Baldur's Gate 3 characters probably ever again. Like, unless it's going to be specifically from, like, D&D or Wizards of the Coast doing something, which feels disingenuous to a certain extent. But, like, we're never going to get to see Karlach again.
And so this is a place that I would also put out, and one of the reasons why there was so much backlash to the open gaming licensing weird thing, is that because this is set in D&D with D&D rules, it would take a little bit of doing, but you could absolutely run your own game that had those characters as NPCs and make your own story, right? So even though you couldn't go through it in a video game sense, that is a thing that everyone could do and craft in their own way. You need Tales of the Nine Hells. That's what you need. And you can get that, and that would be pretty cool. So
genius.
Keith starts working on a campaign in Avernus.
I'm planning the season in my brain right now. I'm going to let them grow for a bit.
Okay. Well, while your seeds are growing, I'm going to go ahead and jump into our patented, non-patented lightning round. It's a little bit short today, but that is because the choices were a little bit short or ridiculously too long. And so to spare Jordan, our editor, I went with a little bit short. Just know that there are a ton of things that are happening, and these were just our top three. So first off, we've got Beetlejuice 2. The trailer just dropped. It is officially titled Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, because of course it is. And it's set to release on September 6th of this year with Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, and Catherine O'Hara all reprising their original roles. This is, of course, alongside some new faces. Most excitingly, at least for me, Jenna Ortega, who just seems to be doing all of the spooky things. And, like, go on with your bad self, right? I feel like there are plenty of folks who have done that and just been like, no, this is who I am. And we'll see. She might do a 180, but for right now, she is our spooky season girl. So that is happening. We also got a trailer from Supacell. And this is, it looks to be a Black British superhero show. And I say superhero show, but I don't mean like tights and capes. Definitely more kind of underground, we gotta save this one person. I don't know if we need to be worried about the world, which feels on brand. And the show is going to be led by Ratman, and that will premiere on Netflix in June. And staying in that, like, black world, apparently Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan are working on a secret film. This also feels on brand. I guess in my mind, I just always assume that somewhere Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan are working on secret films. Anyway, this particular one, we've got some new information about it. It sounds awesome. Apparently, it will be set in the 30s in the Jim Crow South, and hopefully is going to be about vampires going to war against the Klan. We've had a bunch of different things happen, and I'm actually working on a piece that this would fit really well into, because we have this thing where a lot of times the vampires are like the white folks who are perpetrating oppression. Seems to be a theme. And so to have a thing where it's actually the black folks who are the vampires and they're going to war against the colonizers and the terrorists and, you know, the cults, that sounds pretty cool in my book. So we'll have to see where that goes. But if you want more from the Black Nerd Problems Broadcasting Network, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. That was This Week in Nerd News. Tune in next week for more pop culture updates. I'm your host, Victoria Vertine.
And I'm your host, K3 Cleveland.
Remember to like, comment, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Bye, y'all.